lots of issues regarding law enforcement, and there always are on a Monday morning. We welcome on John Reed, president of the Toronto Police Association. Morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. And Hank Edzingas, 640 Toronto crime specialist and former Toronto police inspector, joins us. Hank, same thing. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning, Greg. Happy Monday morning.
Happy Monday morning. Let's start with this. Arif Irani is the justice minister of the federal government, and I started seeing videos of this late in the morning on Saturday, rainy day, but I saw a bunch of protesters targeting his house. I don't know how else to describe it. They're in his driveway. They're leaning up against a basketball net. There's signs. This is, to me, illegal. This is intimidating. Here's some of the audio of the protesters at the Varani household on a subdivision street here in the GTA.
Come on, Abby.
Okay, like, fine, we're not going to see them on American Idol or The Voice. That's fine, but jokes aside, let's start with you, John. This is a problem to me, and I don't know whether TPS were called about this protest. I don't know whether Varani, who was in Ottawa at the time, would have an RCMP detail, but I heard from a neighbor of Varani's, and I spoke to the guy for 15 minutes around 3 o'clock in the afternoon Saturday. He was really scared, and this is no good. What do we do about a protest like this?
So my understanding was TPS was actually called and did actually attend there. There weren't any real incidents that came out of it. But I think, you know, what we're looking at here, this to me, this does cross the line. You know, obviously these are public officials, and I think these protests should be kept in the air as where of the maybe their offices or Queen's Park. You know, because having someone's home targeted is an issue. And not to mention you have the individual whose home it is and the neighbors, too, as you pointed out. And it's concerning for a lot of people when these things all of a sudden pop up in their neighborhood.
Did they break the law? Was it illegal what they did?
I haven't actually seen the video myself. If they end up crossing onto people's property, then yes. Obviously, they're trespassing at that point, yes.
Mm. Hank, I don't know if you got to look at the video, but how would you perceive this situation? It's certainly meant to be intimidating. It's meant to send a message. It's not your standard, let's go to someone's political office, or let's be in a park, or let's even march up and down the street. I think John's right. I think it crosses those lines.
I agree with John as well, Greg. I think it definitely does cross some lines. I think it crosses some lines into criminality, and targeting someone at their house is completely unacceptable. I haven't seen any video or any news articles about the police response, but I think it's incumbent on the police to clear those people out of there. Obviously, Mr. Varani has to be on board to do something like that. He should have a RCMP protection detail as well. That's liaising with Toronto police and figuring out how to get these people away from his house, his safe place, and his neighbor's safe places as well.
Let me expand on that, Hank. Would RCMP be, they probably wouldn't be in his particular riding. I think we'd agree if the prime minister or the opposition leader was traveling somewhere, they'd have a security detail. We do know through news reports, some MPs were recommended security detail over the last several months because of some threats against them. Melissa Lantzman, the deputy leader of the Conservative Party, was one. So, Hank, would RCMP have access to be able to either clear out a protest or respond to something if the MP himself wasn't in the city at that time?
Well, the RCMP would not have assets like a strike team to go in and arrest people and clear them out of there, but they would certainly be liaising with Toronto police. And Toronto Police hate crime units and VIP units would then arrange to act on whatever complaint the RCMP or Mr. Varani would want. And if Mr. Varani is not in town, I'm sure his family is still in town. I'm sure, like John said, his neighbors are still in town, and his neighbors are feeling intimidated as well. And it's behavior that's just not welcome in front of someone's private residence, and it shouldn't be.
John, just so we know more about it, and we saw this happen with the rail protest about a week and a half ago now, the incident gets cleared, and then later on, video is studied, and I think five, maybe six people were arrested from that incident on a couple Tuesdays or Wednesdays ago. Is it likely or possible Toronto police would look at video of this particular protest, say, yep, they're on his driveway, yep, they're leaning up against a basketball net, they're on a neighbor's lawn, yes, we could charge them here?
So I would suggest they would actually review all the video just in the course of their duties. But as far as charging someone for Trespass of Property Act, they would end up generally just moving people off of the property and then releasing them with a provincial fences ticket. I wouldn't normally see that happen after the fact if they've actually kind of left the property already.
So, and right now, as we know, or from what we know, nobody was anybody given a ticket? Was anybody arrested on Saturday?
I don't believe there was any enforcement action taken against anyone, no.
Okay, that's something. Does Varani have to approve that? Hank kind of hinted at that. Does, if Varani says, I don't want charges pressed or I don't want people prosecuted, does he get that, not just as an ordinary citizen, but as a politician, does he get that say if he's like, nah, leave them alone?
Yeah, as a property owner, you could. Sorry, go ahead, Hank.
Yeah, sorry. He would definitely have to complain to have any enforcement action taken.
Okay.
Trespass to Property Act is a provincial offense. It does have arrest powers in it. Criminal harassment is a criminal offense under the criminal code. And there's obviously arrest powers under there, but you would need to have somebody actually complain. And even with the criminal harassment, I think a verbal warning and some action on the part of the police to give the protesters a chance to clear out before you start going in and making arrests. And same with the Trespass to Property Act.
So, John, let me follow that up. So you kind of, the concept is give them the benefit of the doubt. They may not have known it was illegal. They're not destroying property. They're not saying threatening things. Let's assume that's the case. If they don't clear out, if you say, hey, you guys know you're breaking the law, then we've got a situation where people could be given tickets, I suppose.
That's correct. Under the Trespass to Property Act, if they actually refuse to leave, they can actually be arrested, removed from the property, then released with a provincial offensive ticket.
Okay. I'll leave it there, and we'll come back after this, and we'll talk about an important study, and a really important study, I think, if you've been a police officer, a relative of a police officer, a father, a mother of a cop, or obviously a wife or a girlfriend. I want to bring some stats into this mix and figure out how we can turn these stats around the other way. We've got John Reed, Hank Edzinga with us. John, I'll start with you, and this is the kind of stuff that I think makes most people just agonize when they see these numbers. Everybody's got to be accountable for their own actions at the end of the day, but CBC News did a study documenting 1 in 3 suspensions across Ontario. 4 officers, male and female, involved allegations of domestic abuse, sexual assault. It's heart-wrenching. So I want to get your reaction to that study, but I also want to ask, do we need to ramp up supports internally or even allow people to go outside of the police externally and get help for things like this before it gets to the point where potential crimes are committed here? What do you think we need that we don't have in our airspace right now?
So I think the support piece is critical here. And I think, over the years, policing is evolving. I think it's really important to point out that, police officers are human. They're a portion of the population, and they have issues, family issues, relationship issues, like anybody else. But it's also a very, very stressful job.
Yeah.
And it is important, I think, to provide those supports in the front end. You talk about kind of going outside, and that's where our association does actually provide those supports outside of the services themselves. And it's critically important to make sure our members actually have those available to them when they need them. And these are some of the problems we do run into. Obviously, all these services cost money, but we need to make sure that when somebody puts their hand up and they need some help, they're able to get it immediately.
I know in the story, Jeff McGuire is the executive director of the Ontario Association of Chiefs of Police, and he reacted to the data, John, and called it disheartening. Does it land the same way for you? We got to move this in a different direction, right?
The data itself is concerning, obviously. But as I mentioned before, these officers are human. They have the same issues and concerns that I think anybody in society does. But once again, if we can get involved in the front end and try and prevent some of these situations from occurring, that's the best case for everybody.
Hank, how do you view this particular data set? And are most officers, would they be comfortable going internal? We're all a little, maybe we tiptoe in our own workspaces and workplaces if we're going to suggest I've got a problem with somebody at work or I'm getting abused or it's about working conditions. We are worried that we're in that sort of sanctity of trust. Do police officers worry about that also?
I think absolutely they do. I think the wellness programs within the police services do some very, very valuable work. But I think the first thought amongst most police officers who are brave enough and willing enough to seek some help is to get that help outside of the police service, perhaps with referrals. And the association does some great work, especially when it comes to confidentiality, but to stay within your own employer's realm to seek some help is really going to expose you to some weaknesses. And this isn't just a police problem either, Greg. It's a first responders problem, right? The jobs are so stressful. There's so much PTSD out there, and you know, the support systems have to be in place. And I think the external ones are much more valuable than the internal ones.
Yeah, I think Hank makes a great point, John. Paramedics, think about what they are witnessing now, and I would argue it's even a different job than it was 5-6 years ago. With the amount of drug use we've got on our streets, every mayor talks about it, every city councilor talks about it. Paramedics face the brunt of that night in, night out, don't they?
Oh, they do. And when you start looking at our first responders, we have paramedics, firefighters, police officers, you know, they're all dealing with these issues, which nobody else really wants to have to deal with. But those members have no choice. They have to go in, do their job and deal with it, and ultimately go home with their families. You know, and unfortunately, all the things they see, you cannot unsee a lot of the issues and pieces they see. You know, I've often called it those jobs are basically a front seat to life, and you'll see people at their worst.
John, I'd also make the point, so many of these suspension cases, there's 453 suspension cases over the course of 11 years in a giant province like Ontario. Of course, you'd like that number to be lower, but I could go to other jurisdictions and districts in the United States or Europe, and we could find a higher number. I bring that up because, if anything, police departments and police officers like yourself have been calling for speedier trials for everybody accused of crimes. When people reference, well, the police are paying out this month, the city has to pay this month out for a suspended police officer. Well, yeah, they wouldn't if the person was going to be convicted. But we're waiting on what, 16, 18, 20 months sometimes for people to go to trial. And you and others have made the point that's just no good. The system's got to get fixed so they get justice faster, whichever way the verdict goes.
Absolutely. And you know, people have to understand all these officers, if they do end up being involved in a situation where they're criminal charges, they're entitled to the presumption of innocence like anybody else here in Canada. I think, you know, the decision to actually suspend or not suspend, that's a decision based on the chief of police. You know, and I will point out that there's a lot of functions which officers can do. You know, instead of being suspended, they could be brought back on some kind of restricted duty, which is another important piece to keep them, gainfully employed, working with the service, and also contributing.
Hank, as we wrap, probably when you started as cop, it was a while ago, we probably had quicker outcomes, didn't we, for cases like this? Whether it was SIU or whether it went through an actual court system, people weren't waiting 2 years, 2+ years to go to trial to either clear their name or for justice to do what it's supposed to do if they actually are guilty and to convict them. We just didn't wait this long.
No, and it's a problem with the court system too, Greg. It's, domestic violence as a whole across the country has been going up. The stats have been going up year after year after year every year. And the court processes are so slow. And you know, for things like drug treatment court and drug diversion court, it helps to speed things up. But there's courtrooms at Old City Hall in downtown Toronto dedicated just to dealing with domestic violence cases. And that tells you how prolific the problem is across society. And it definitely needs to be brought up to speed, up to the 21st century, and speed up the court processes for these people.
Yeah, got to turn it in a different direction. John, Hank, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. We'll talk next Monday.
Thanks, Greg. Thank you.
There's John Reed, Hank, and Zynga joining us on Toronto Today. It's, again, everybody deserves their day in court. The numbers are pretty stark. And again, these aren't crimes of larceny. These aren't crimes of doing something in your car you shouldn't be. We're talking domestic abuse, sexual assault, sexual harassment. It's way too large a number. I wouldn't get caught in the 1 in 3 suspensions of police officers for that, because the raw numbers are going to be what they are. But the percentage of suspensions of cops involving allegations of this crime seems way too high. So whether the raw numbers are low, the ratio is not quite as high as you might think it is, as in other districts.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.